This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neal Conan is away. Congress may have passed an economic stimulus package, but a lot of us still aren't ready to celebrate. We're taking a wait-and-see attitude to this economic situation. And while we're waiting, we're trying to figure out what to do with ourselves. Do we plunk down a bundle of money at the local Cineplex, or do we stay home and watch TV or a DVD, read a book, or surf the web? Just what are we in the mood for these days? We'll find out. What's your favorite book, movie, or TV show that's helping you weather this recession? Give us a call. Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org, or join the conversation on our website, npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Later, an extreme makeover for Martha Washington. But first, the next in our occasional series, Your Life in a Recession, we'll explore leisure time in a recession. What's getting you through the dark days of this recession? And with us on the line now from Beverly Hills, California, is Janine Basinger. She chairs the Film Studies Department at Wesleyan University. Good to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
So, Janine, would you say that the movies people go to see change during difficult economic times?
Well, you know, it's hard to answer that because today people have so much control over what they can see and what they want to see. And we tend to keep comparing that question back to the Depression or to World War II when they had a more limited choice. But yes, I think that they want films of, well, basically people always want the same thing from the movies: good, cheap, available. And, you know, Hollywood can usually deliver on two of those, cheap and available, but not always on good. But people either want escape or they want reassurance. And so it's kind of fundamental to the same thing that goes on all the time, really, with movie going.
I think the I'm not going to remember them all, but among the top five at the box office this past week, and I think the number one was Friday the 13th,
a sort of teenage slasher movie,
a couple of romantic comedies, those kinds of films. Can we construe anything from that, or would those movies have been doing well anyway?
They would have been doing well anyway, because the remake of the slasher horror movie is a tried and true format for the teenage or young moviegoer, and they're the people who go out to the movies the most. So that is a name, Friday the 13th, that has a pre-sold, built-in, you know, audience guaranteed. Romantic comedies are date movies, and those are the other people who go out constantly to the movies. Now, whether those two romantic movies will last at the box office or not, you know, they probably won't, because word of mouth tends to kill these things off. But the slasher movie, that's going to go a few weeks, because, you know, it just seems that people like slashing no matter what's going on.
Well, you know, one of the romantic comedies, I haven't seen it, but I'm assuming it was a romantic comedy, is Confessions of a Shopaholic. That is a romantic comedy, isn't it?
Well, if the romance in your life is shopping, yes, I would say yes, but I think so, yes. That's the big if, is how are people going to react to a movie about shopping when, you know, you presumably don't have any money to shop? I mean, that's an interesting question. The thing is, people like to see goods in the movies. They want to see clothes and furniture. There's always an audience for that type of thing. So maybe it will go, maybe it won't. But there's a fundamental thing that people always forget. A movie really has to be good for people to go in big numbers. It's got to be good. People have to want to see it. They have to see it come out and tell their friends, go to that. I liked it. And that was never more true than now, when people can control so much of what they're seeing. You know, you can go on the internet, you can go to your Blockbuster store, you can go to your TV, where you have old movies, new movies, old TV shows, new TV shows, National Geographic, news, sports, music. You know, the audience has choices. And so if this movie doesn't get good word of mouth, if it doesn't work, they're not going to go, no matter if they are losing all their money at the bank and they want to see somebody else buying stuff.
All right, we're going to take a call now. We've got Marina on the line from San Antonio, Texas. Hi, Marina.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Marina. I like watching Dexter during the recession because he's a serial killer and he experienced a traumatizing thing when he was a kid that made him that way, and he goes through that and lives his life well, and I know we could survive the recession if he can make the best of his life. It's kind of metaphorical. He can survive his traumatization, and we can survive our recession problem.
Okay, Marina, I'm having a little bit of a hard time hearing you, but I think it's an interesting, though slightly odd, choice if he can survive by becoming a serial killer.
Well, that's an excellent solution for all of us, I'm sure. But, you know, it makes a good point, which is escape is escape. You know, you define it on your own terms. And a character who's living outside the norm and doing things that you can't do can be a reassuring figure. I mean, it's everybody describes, you know, escape is personal for people. And to be good escape, it's got to connect to something that the audience feels or believes in, and it can go in any direction. It doesn't have to be mindless either. During World War II, people went in huge numbers to films about combat and World War II because it was on their mind. Mm-hmm. And it was reassuring to them to see stories in which it turned out okay, or in which at least they could kind of empathize or connect to maybe what their loved ones were going through in combat. They wanted to know about it. They wanted to see it. So, you know, it's really tricky when you start defining these things. Unless you want to oversimplify, people find what they want to find in movies, and nowadays there are so many choices. So many different kinds.
And well, I want to, speaking of choice, I want to bring in another guest because what gives us the most choices, of course, these days is the Internet. And Bill Tanser is General Manager of Global Research at Hitwise, and they're an online service that tracks Internet trends. And he's joining us from our bureau in New York. Good to have you with us, Bill.
Thanks for having me, Lynn.
So what are you tracking right now? What kinds of sites are popular, the most popular right now?
Well, the intuitive sites that are increasing in traffic, sites like Financial News. I see big increases, about 20% year over year in visits
now,
to sites.
Now, that's not escapist.
That's not escapist at all. You know, sites like Yahoo Finance and Google Finance, definitely increases there. But when you back up a little bit and look at the sample that we track, which is about 10 million Internet users in the U.S., some of the segments that are increasing are a little counterintuitive. Celebrity gossip tends to be up significantly over the previous year. It's doubled since last year and quadrupled over the last 2 years. And I think that represents one of the areas of escape or diversion that a lot of Internet users are engaging in.
Mm-hmm. Was that a trend before the recession, increasing news about gossips going up, 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 or has it started with the news of the recession?
That's a great question. It was a trend, but I think it was in its infancy before the economy really started to go bad. One of the things that we studied, we did a little analysis for Forbes magazine, and we looked back in August 2008, segmented our sample just for the most affluent households. And what we found is if you looked at those affluent households, the top sites they visited were their brokerage accounts, sites like E-Trade and Schwab and Merrill Lynch. Then if you forwarded that sample or that view to August of 2008, all of a sudden, those brokerage sites started to drop down to the bottom, and we saw sites like Perez Hilton and TMZ, celebrity blogs, at the top of the list.
I suspect people got easily distracted from their Schwab accounts.
Exactly.
Going on with Paris Hilton.
And that particular segment is really interesting. And, you know, probably had the most to lose in that drop in the Dow that happened in the fall, were the ones that were putting their heads in the sand and engaging in a diversionary activity versus going to those sites to check their portfolio value.
On the other hand, another site that I understand is popular, or the sites that are popular now are gambling and gambling sites, which...
That's true. Yeah, we've seen online gambling go up as well. Now, all gambling sites not created equal. It's kind of interesting. We can segment gambling by a number of different activities. We've seen visits to state lottery sites increase. We've seen the traditional online casinos increase, while poker sites or poker betting sites have actually decreased over these last couple of months. So there does seem to be a difference in online gambling activity, but when you look at it in the aggregate, we're seeing an increase.
All right, we are talking with Bill Tanzer. He's the author of Click, What Millions of People Are Doing Online and Why It Matters. Also with Janine Basinger, chair of the Film Studies Department at Wesleyan University in Connecticut. And we'd like to hear from you. We'd like to know what you're doing with your leisure time in a recession. What's your favorite book, movie, or TV show that's helping you weather the recession? Give us a call at 800-989-8255 or send an email to talk@npr.org. And we're going to take a call now from Peggy, and she's calling from Napa Valley, California. Hi, Peggy.
Hi. Well, I'm catching up on episodes of Big Love. I subscribe to Netflix so I can comfortably lay on my couch and watch Big Love. And for me, it's pure escapism.
Yeah. What's so escapist about Big Love? I'm a fan as well, but why do
you find it? Somebody else's problem.
And do you find it realistic or just?
No, I don't find it realistic at all. So it's just entertaining, and to hear and see the problems they have. Mine are just, it's just pure escapism for me.
All right. Thanks so much for calling, Peggy. But Peggy brings up the subject of Netflix, and I wanted to ask you about that, Bill Tanzer. How's Netflix, how's business doing for Netflix and other movie rental sites?
In terms of online visits, Netflix is actually doing really well. We're seeing an increase for Netflix, a little over 10% over these last couple of months. Now, before I came on, I did a little analysis, and I checked Netflix against movie directory sites, sites like MoviePhone, where you might go to check the movie times of your local theater. Those sites actually down. So it looks like, in terms of internet users, we're preferring to rent videos online than we rather than actually going to the movie and paying for a movie ticket.
It's cheaper.
What about watching TV or movies on the computer? Are they watching it on the computer or?
Yes, they are. You know, one of the things I just wrote about in my Wall Street Journal column was about the site Hulu, which has also seen a pretty significant increase, mostly people watching sitcoms. There's about a 20-minute limit factor, it seems like, on the amount of time people are willing to spend online watching video.
All right, we're talking about movies and the web and what is television serving up in this recession. We'll get to that next. And your calls, what's your favorite book, movie, or TV show? What's helping you weather this recession? Give us a call at 800-989-8255. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. In better times, you know, about a year and a half ago, you could find shows like Flip That House and My House Is Worth What all over cable TV. Now, as fortunes change, so do many of the TV shows we watch. But change comes slowly to TV. We'll talk more about that in a moment. Our focus this hour is on your leisure time in a recession, part of our series about how the economy is affecting your life. What's your favorite book, movie, or TV show? The book, movie, or TV show that's helping you weather this recession. Give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, and our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can also join the conversation on our website, npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Our guests are Janine Basinger. She chairs the Film Studies Department at Wesleyan University in Middletown, Connecticut, and Bill Tanzer. He tracks trends on the web for Hitwise, and he also wrote a book about it called Click, What Millions of People Are Doing Online and Why It Matters. We've heard about what's going on in the movies and on the internet. How is television responding to this recession? Joining us now to talk about that is Genia Belafonte, TV critic for the New York Times. Thanks for being with us, Genia.
Thank you, Lynn.
So are the TV studios looking at this economic situation and creating new programs in response?
You know, we have to assume that we are, because television does like to reflect its era. The crash has happened too recently for us to be seeing the fruits of these creative efforts yet. However, in a real sort of moment of fortuitous timing, TNT, which is a basic cable network, was ready to go with something that was obviously planned a long time ago called Leverage, which made its debut in December. And it's a one-hour drama which stars Timothy Hutton as a sort of avenger of financial fraud and corporate malfeasance. So it's just very funny to see this happening now. And, you know, someone obviously was either anticipating this or just had this idea, and the series is turning out to do extremely well.
Was reading the Wall Street Journal very carefully.
Yes.
What about a show like Damages? That has a little bit of that in it, too, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, Damages really, again, had a funny prescience because when it debuted in 2007, it revolved around the prosecution of an Enron-type CEO named Arthur Frobisher, who was played by Ted Danson, who had bilked his company's pension fund. And the entire plot, you know, revolved around a lawyer trying to nail him, a very sort of amoral lawyer. But again, it was a revenge, a corporate revenge fantasy.
Now, CBS, which hasn't been doing very well in recent years, is suddenly doing pretty well in the ratings.
Yeah.
How do you explain that?
CBS, which is always considered the sort of stodgier network, not young, not youthful, not hip, is really sort of having a renaissance with the police procedural, primarily a series called The Mentalist, which stars the Australian an Australian actor who had been a psychic fraud on talk shows. He would pretend to be able to connect people with the dead, to be able to solve crimes with these psychic abilities. You know, he comes clean that he's totally been a fraud. In the meanwhile, his family members have been murdered, and he goes to work as a detective as a kind of payback, really, for his fraudulence, and is very, very successful because he is actually just intuitively very, very gifted. These episodes wrap up in 1 hour. They're purely episodic. They do not make certain demands of the viewer that shows with long, you know, and complicated narrative arcs like the HBO dramas make. So we sort of understand this as kind of comfort food television. You can really get into the show for an hour, not think about anything else.
What about something like Lost? Are those kinds of series
Lost,
where...
Lost is so complex. It still does very well. It's still popular, and it is certainly escapist, but you need to be focused when you're watching it. You can't be distracted with your own dwindling...
And it's been losing some viewers, hasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. And I have an email here from Julianne from Little Rock. She says, I'm really enjoying the new show from the Alias director J.J. Abrams, Fringe. It's based on the far-fetched segment of science called Fringe Science, and it's just as addicting as Alias with twists and turns in every episode that keep me coming back every week. It has given me something to turn to now that Heroes has started to become less and less entertaining. So
yes.
There's another vote for J.J. Abrams.
Yeah. Fringe is another... conspiracy theory, complicated conspiracy theory show that, again, certainly demands your attention. It's done very well, and certainly because of J.J. Abrams has benefited from a lot of buzz.
All right. Well, we're going to take a call now. I want to go to Scott. He's calling from Flagstaff, Arizona. Hi, Scott.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead.
Hi. I actually enjoy epic fantasy, even though my wife makes fun of me all the time for it. And Steven Erikson really does it for me because the guy can read him and be gone from this world. And that's what I like.
Have you always liked that, or are you particularly finding yourself wanting to read it now at this particular time?
Probably more now, just because it really is just a complete take me away from this world. So a little bit more now, and although I've liked it for 5 or 6 years now.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling, Scott.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Great. We're going to take another call now. We're going to go to Travis, and Travis is calling from Lansing, Michigan. Hey, Travis.
Hey. I actually really enjoy the online game World of Warcraft.
Well, tell us a little bit about that. Why do you like it?
Well, in World of Warcraft, you have a lot more control over your own success. The more work you put into the game, the more you get out of it. And so unlike the real world, you can actually see the fruits of your labors rather than watch them evaporate.
And do you find yourself playing the game more now?
Oh, yeah. Right about when the recession started was when a friend of mine actually started getting me into the game, and I found myself being more entertained by it than worrying about anything else that's going on here in the Motor City area.
Okay. Oh, you live, that's right, in the Motor City area. All right. Well, thank you very much for calling in. Let me ask you about that Bill Tanser. Games like World of Warcraft and other computer games like that going up in popularity?
They are. I can't comment specifically on World of Warcraft because a lot of that traffic happens outside on a private network, but I can tell you that visits to fantasy games up. The other category of online games, the non-betting games that are up, are those simple games like Solitaire, things that you might find on a site like Pogo. We find traffic to those sites increasing as well. So that's yet another diversionary activity that we think is increasing because of where we are today.
All right. And I wanted to ask you, Janine, we were talking earlier with Genia about TV shows that were sort of prescient about the way things are going. I wanted to ask you about the movie The International, which is a movie about a really bad bank.
Yes. Well, it would have been in the works, of course, for quite a while, and as she referred to the turnaround time, not being able to get things ready so quickly, but starting to get it ready. I think they had a piece of good luck having that. Of course, bankers and banks have always been ready villains in the movies, going back to Frank Capra movies, even in the 1930s. But that movie isn't doing too well at the box office, and it didn't get good reviews. So it's fortuitous that they came up with a plot we can all identify with. But again, it needs to be good to compete with everything else. Notice all the internet things, the games, the betting, the television. There's so many choices for people that actually getting up and going out to see a movie, you know, is the hardest kind of form of escapism probably that there is. You can sit home and do so much else.
Plus, but you have to spend so much money for it with you if you get all that popcorn and soda and everything with
it. Still cheap compared to theater or going out for dinner or to a sports event.
That's true. Let's go to Barbara. She's calling from Fort Myers, Florida. Hi, Barbara.
Hi.
Go ahead.
We have found a lot of enjoyment of watching some of the old movies on Turner Classic. There's just something very relaxing to just go to a movie that you know how it ends. Everything turns out all right. There's nothing deep and dark and sinister. And
so you're saying you're like rewatching movies, not just the old movies, but because you know how the movie's going to end, so you're like rewatching movies you've already seen.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, Cary Grant is just Cary Grant, and he's
always
one of those.
Cary Grant, the economy can collapse, but Cary Grant will never collapse.
That's a good way of putting it. All right, well, thanks so much for your call, Barbara.
You're welcome.
All right, now we're going to go to Violet. Violet is calling from Georgia. Hi, Violet.
Hello, Lynn. I just wanted to say that I understand that somebody, the enormously talented late Peter Ustinov, do you remember Peter Ustinov?
I do, yes.
So clever. Somebody made a film about his book, The Old Man and Mr. Smith. Have you ever read it?
No, I haven't.
It's enormously funny and a very unappreciated, very talented gentleman was Peter Ustinov. And I'm telling you, Lynn, if I used to belong to an hors d'oeuvre club, and if you want to laugh so hard that your ribs hurt, I suggest your listeners get hold of The Old Man and Mr. Smith by Peter Ustinov.
All right.
You don't laugh, Lynn. You ever heard of the English children's book writer Beatrix Potter?
Mm-hmm.
Treat yourself to the complete series and get your friends to put on an English accent and everybody read two paragraphs and pass it around at your next cocktail party.
Now, Violet, are you putting on an English accent for me right now, Violet?
But didn't you love Peter Ustinov?
Oh, back in the day. Well, yes,
so
I did.
Clever and so unappreciated.
Well, thank you so much for calling, Violet.
Bye-bye.
Charming talking to you. Well, I think we have old movies here are one of the things that people are really getting into, I think, Janine Basinger.
Yes, I definitely think so. They ones that you've seen before, you're glad to look at again, and ones that you missed on Turner Classic Movies, they're available or at your DVD store, whatever, and people do find the quality of the old films and the stories to be reassuring. Old genre forms they're familiar with, stars that they love and feel comfortable with, and those really make great escapist routes, even though the films themselves may be sad or in sadly or, you know, whatever, they become really great sources of escape because they're familiar and they're brilliantly done, many of them.
Genia Belafonte, what about TV? What about old TV shows?
Well, you know, the 70s were a high mark for very realistic shows about difficult economic times. Obviously, you know, we were in the middle of a gas oil shortage and a terrible recession. And Norman Lear was a kind of one-man factory for this genre with shows like All in the Family and Good Times, which was set in, of course, in a Chicago housing project. And the theme song, which it's hard to imagine a theme song quite like it today, you know, talks about easy credit ripoffs and the tough life in the projects. And he found comedy in the difficulty, let's say, of getting health care when you have no insurance. And, you know, we might see something like that again, something that sharp and witty and relevant, we hope.
Great. If someone's got a cell phone there, maybe you can turn it off. So it was interfering a little bit with what Jeannie was just saying there. And I do want to remind people that you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. All right, we're going to take a call now from Joe. And Joe is calling from Zanesville, Ohio.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I was calling to say I like the show 24, particularly this season because of the character Jack Bauer's search for corruption within the government.
Aha, so that seems relevant to you at this moment.
Yes, it does. Very relevant.
All right, well, thanks for your call, Joe.
Thank you.
So it seems like people find escapism, interestingly, not so much just from movies or TV shows that are comedies, but also from movies and TV shows that might have some relevance to what's going on in the world at this moment, you know, corruption or fighting corruption or fighting bad banks, things like that. Genia?
Yeah, you know, 24 has taken a sort of self-reflective turn this season. It was maligned last season, really, for kind of dramatically falling apart and for its elevation of torture. You know, many people thought that it really made torture seem reasonable and feasible. Now, the problem with this season is that there's still a lot of provocation and unsavory interrogation practices, but the twist this season is that the enemy, you know, is not a Middle Eastern terrorist group, but an actual corrupt U.S. government.
All right, let's take another call now from Zora. She's calling from Powell, Ohio. Hi, Zora.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I was just like to say that one of the TV shows that helps me feel better about this recession is the TV show Ugly Betty.
Why is that?
Well, it's sort of about this kind of plain Jane who works at a fashion magazine. And at the end, she befriends her office manager, who's like a Casanova kind of type. And, you know, it just shows that a lot of what matters is what's on the inside as opposed to what's on the outside, which is kind of a reassuring moral in this tough time.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling.
No problem.
And I just want to read an email here from Frances. She's calling from, she's writing from Anchorage. It says, what I'm reading during economic storm, Fooled by Randomness, The Hidden Role of Chance in Life and in the Markets by Nassim Nicholas Taleb. One of the work's central themes is that in American culture, including academic and Wall Street, the role of luck, good and bad, has been grossly underestimated and that the data simply do not support the widely held belief that America's rich got there through brains and hard work. I think that's a good good thought for the moment to reassure ourselves that it's not all our fault that we're in the situation we're in. And I wanted to ask you, Bill Tanser, about one other thing about what people are doing online, and that is, as I understand it, a lot of people going to job sites.
Of course, you know, that's one of the intuitive things that we see is that there is a lot of traffic going to job sites. I found it really interesting, though, to look at the clickstream of job sites. And that, when I say clickstream, I mean where people are coming from and where they go to when they visit a job site. And I was looking for some escapism or diversionary activity there. And what I found is one area that we haven't talked about yet, and that is social networking. About 2.5% of all people leaving a job site go to their favorite social network, MySpace, Facebook. A lot of that could be explained by people actually networking to find a job, but I think a bit of that is also trying to get away. Talking with friends.
And, of course, social networking is just going crazy right now on the internet, right?
Exactly. It's still increasing at a very rapid rate.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Bill.
Thank you.
Bill Tanzer is author of Click, What Millions of People Are Doing Online and Why It Matters, and he's the general manager of global research at Hitwise. That's an online service that tracks internet trends. We also spoke with Janine Basinger, chair of the Film Studies Department at Wesleyan University in Middletown, Connecticut, and Genia Belafonte, TV critic for The New York Times. Thanks to all of you for being with us.
Thank you.
Coming up, Martha Washington gets a makeover, why she might not be the frumpy first lady of our history books. Stay with us. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.